I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We continue looking at the results from Monday's federal election. When the campaign began, it was dubbed the Seinfeld election in that it was about nothing. Sure, there were questions about of ethics surrounding Stephen Harper and his government and a budget he was trying to pass. It turned out to be a remarkable election. Today I'm joined by the Victoria Times columnist Paul Wilcox. We'll ask Mr. Wilcox if it is indeed historic and what we can expect in the 41st Parliament in Ottawa. It'll be a parliament where the Conservatives have a majority, Jack Layton is the leader of the official opposition, and the NDP has a caucus where a majority of its members come from Quebec. The Liberal Party of Canada is now at the third party in the House. It's a parliament, too, that will have Elizabeth May of the Green Party as a member. There's much to talk about. The website for more is at wilcox.blogspot.com. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Paul Wilcox. Good morning, Mr. Wilcox.
Good morning. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for joining us. So is this a historic election?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think pundits, columnists always say after every election that it's a historic election. We always find some reason to say that. But in this case, I think the changes are dramatic and historic in the sense that we're going to be seeing the effects of them for, you know, possibly decades. It is one of those votes that that signals a real change in the landscape. And depending on how the parties respond, we could be looking at, for example, a 20-year conservative dynasty in Canada.
Now, was this something that was expected? I mean, the polls sort of indicated a big NDP seat total at the end of it, but even a majority for the Conservatives didn't seem like a possibility, and of course the collapse of the Liberal Party.
Yeah, it's interesting. The polls were reasonably accurate in terms of the popular vote for the most part, but what broke down was the analysis of those results. It did look like the Conservatives were going to, you know, maybe get a majority, maybe not. It was hard to predict. It certainly didn't. The polls, there wasn't an expectation of such a total Liberal collapse or a total Bloc Québécois collapse with the resulting benefits for the NDP. And the result, I mean, really has remade the political landscape in Canada. Not so much the Conservative majority, because that was certainly a possibility. But you have the Conservative majority now potentially unchecked by any sort of competent, consistent opposition. I mean, the collapse of the Liberals, for all their parts, faults, for all the difficulty in Michael Ignatieff connecting with voters, there was a long tradition there and sort of a skilled staff level and experience in government that let them hold, or in opposition that let them hold governments to account. That's going to be very difficult for them to do with the relative handful of people that they have left. The New Democrats are sort of untested in that role as opposition and, you know, have a remarkably inexperienced group of Quebec new members of parliament who've been elected, so they're going to have difficulty as well. So, you know, from Stephen Harper's point of view, he's moving into a situation where he has a reasonable mandate from the voters. I mean, it's still only 40% support. He's not going to be facing any sort of effective opposition and really has a chance to consolidate the party's hold on government while the NDP and the Liberals just try and figure out what the heck they should do next.
And so the 40% that the Conservatives had, that's not much of a rise in support, is it? I think it's like 3% from the last election?
Yeah, that's one of the many interesting things, is it shows, again, how incredibly flawed our electoral system is, because you're right, they managed to raise their vote by about two percentage points, which in terms of popular support, they actually managed to attract about 5% more, persuade about 5% more Canadians to vote for them, and that translated into, you know, almost 20% more seats in the legislature, which shows, I think, a couple of things. One, it shows how well organized the Conservatives have been ever since, really, Stephen Harper took over. And so they didn't just go out and say, let's try and appeal to voters across Canada. Or, I mean, to some extent they did that. But really their success came because they said, where can we add pockets of voter support? Which 40 ridings across the country out of the 308 can we make a gain in and steal a seat from the other people? And so they were able to generate a lot of seats without a large increase in popular support.
That's something that Elizabeth May did, right? The Greens, they just targeted her riding, and I guess Vancouver Centre was another one.
Yeah, they illustrated that same point, that the targeting works. With the Greens also, I mean, their success really came from two factors, I think, that they're closely linked. Elizabeth May was really able to, because she was focused on that riding, like the Conservatives, recruit probably about 2,000 active volunteers in her campaign. And as a result, the participation, the voter turnout in Saanich Gulf Islands jumped by about 7,500 people in this election from the previous election. And it was already a riding that had the highest voter participation in British Columbia. So, you know, she sort of did offer a blueprint that if you can persuade people who haven't voted at all before to come out and vote for you, that's probably much easier than persuading conservatives or New Democrats in many cases to switch over to your cause.
Now, during the campaign, I had all the candidates from my riding, Vancouver Kingsway, on the program, and I asked my MP, Don Davies, the NDP MP, if Harper won on Monday, whether it was a minority or majority, did that mean that voters had forgiven whatever ethical trespasses he might have committed? At the time, he said that he didn't know. Now that they have a majority, have the Canadian people done that?
No, I don't think so, but I think the Canadian people have sent a kind of alarming message, at least from my perspective, that they don't really care that much about a lot of the Democratic deficit issues because, I mean, some people, the sort of core conservative supporters, just deny that those issues existed. They accept the Prime Minister's assertion that the other parties were just ganging up on him and that all this sort of debate in Parliament is just gibberish and bickering and they shouldn't pay attention to it. But I think a lot of people in the middle concluded that, yes, maybe Harper didn't really respect democracy. Yes, MPs were being sort of sidelined into a trivial role in our political process and weren't really getting the information they needed to do their jobs. But that was okay with them on balance if Harper could do some other things right, if he could offer them a stable economy and reasonable public safety and things like that. So it's, from a Democratic point of view, I think it was probably a disheartening election in that sense.
And now that they have a majority, it seems like nothing will change.
No, I don't think anything will change. There's no reason certainly to expect anything to change. And it would have been nice, I guess, if some of the new conservative members of Parliament sort of took a stronger role and decided, you know, we're not really content with just doing whatever the Prime Minister's office says and being there as loyal foot soldiers. I mean, that could help. But no, I don't see any signs of that changing. I think Stephen Harper can conclude that people were happy with what he's doing, and now he has the ability to move forward without, again, sort of feeling overly constrained by Parliament and its traditional role, traditional and constantly shrinking role in providing oversight to what the Prime Minister's office chooses to do.
We'll get to the BC picture in just a sec, but I'm fascinated about Mr. Layton's success in Quebec. Some people have suggested that because the Bloc is reduced to 4 seats there, that sovereignty is dead. I don't think so myself, but what do you think?
No, I think that you're correct. I think that from outside Quebec particularly, it's very easy to read too much into this. I mean, I think people were very, very tired of the Bloc, and Gilles Duceppe felt that they were sort of, that the Bloc was tired as well, really, just going through the motions, taking the vote for granted, and the Democrats, or the Quebecers, theoretically should have had an affinity for the New Democrats long ago. There's sort of many of the values that of Quebec Liberal provincial governments aren't that far off the federal New Democrats. And in this election, they just, to some extent, I think, in a protest vote, chose to turn their backs on the other parties and hand a surprising victory to the New Democrats, and probably a really problematic victory to the New Democrats, because they are now a Quebec-dominated party, and that's going to make it very interesting when the caucus gets together to talk about issues. They've gone from being a party that had almost no francophone MPs to having a majority of francophone MPs, and that, you know, just on a daily level, that's going to change the dynamic of what's going on, as well as having so many, you know, very young, very inexperienced people, which in some cases I'm sure will turn out to be a tremendous plus, because they come without baggage, they come without sort of the old-style politics that we've seen so much of. But in other cases, you know, it's like, I mean, you can bet now that the conservative staffers are plowing through the Facebook pages and past comments and past activities of some of these new MPs, and some of them it's going to prove embarrassing for them. But sadly, I don't think you can conclude too much about sovereignty there. It's probably still ticking along as an issue at about the same level as it always has.
And the Conservatives proved that a government in Canada could win a majority without Quebec.
They did, and that's, again, I guess that's another significant shift, and it's one of those things that I think people traditionally have not thought possible. And that, so many of these things, it's hard to know what effect that's going to have in the long term, because to a certain extent, that feeling that you had to have Quebec was a check on Quebec's sovereignty, because people in the province could say, they need us, all the parties need us, they're all going to make concessions to us, you know, when push comes to shove, and that was sort of reassuring. And now Quebec, potentially, especially if the NDP is sidelined, could feel more left out of the process. And that's, you know, I think when we heard Stephen Harper promising to continue basically on the same course that he's been on all along, to some extent, I'd like to hope, in any case, that that's a reflects a realization on his part that, you know, there's some caution needed in terms of making sure that an overly trivialized opposition and an overly sort of discarded role for the opposition, particularly the New Democrats, could fuel that feeling in Quebec further that they no longer are. They're even farther from the center of power in Ottawa.
And, of course, the Liberal Party, that it was just a disastrous campaign for them. You write in your blog that they're broke, and with the Harper government's plan to cut public financing to political parties, this doesn't bode well for them and their future, right?
No, I think, I mean, this could well be the end of the Liberal Party as a national political force, and it's, you know, it's always risky to make predictions on things like that. Parties have a way of rebounding, but it'll be very hard for them to attract donations. Who gives money to a third-place party? And if you're a sort of a pragmatic donor, you're going to pick either the Conservatives or the Democrats for the most part. They'll lose the public funding when Harper changes the $2 per vote rule, and they don't really, and they'll also, as the third party with a very few MPs, they lose the staff and support that is sort of parties have on Parliament Hill as part of the role of fulfilling the duties in the House of Commons, and they're seeing their share of the Senate seats shrink as well. So it's hard to see pragmatically that they have the resources to rebuild at this point, and it's also really hard to see them figure out what their role is. You know, if the NDP, or especially if the NDP can build on its momentum and sort of be a center-left party, and the Conservatives can avoid going too far and stay a center-right party, then there's not really any room left for the Liberals except as a perpetual either also-ran or sort of seesawing back and forth with the New Democrats. And that's where you get into if the potential for a very, very, very long Conservative stint in power, because as we've seen here in British Columbia, when the center-right vote is divided between the Socreds and the Liberals, or the Liberals and the Progressive Democratic Alliance, or whoever is out there, then the NDP does very well, and it will be the same federally. It could be a huge opportunity for the Conservatives if they maintain the right turf to govern for 20 or 25 years.
You know, you mentioned the Senate there, and I was just thinking about it. Does the Senate get abolished now? Because, I mean, the Conservatives were sort of talking about, I guess, term limits, and then the NDP's against it. I mean, they're the two dominant parties now in the House.
Yeah, no, it doesn't, because having written a reasonable amount about Senate reform, and because it's probably interesting and important, and Stephen Harper seemed very serious about it, the more you look at the constitutional, the impossibility almost of constitutional change in this country, the more you realize that Senate reform is one of those things that we'll be talking about for a very, very long time and probably won't happen. You know, the requirement for provincial approval for changes to the Constitution means that the smaller parties in the smaller provinces in Atlantic Canada have a consistently logical reason to just say no to any proposal that would erode their current disproportionate status within Confederation. So, and they see that, you know, this was a promise made to them as a condition of becoming part of Canada. So I don't think, I mean, you might see more effective term limits. It's possible that there could be a movement towards elected senators, though on some sort of voluntary basis, though probably not. I mean, Stephen Harper, as we've seen, seems to have embraced the idea of appointing Conservative partisans and campaign workers to the Senate just as enthusiastically as the Liberals ever did.
And as a result of the election here in BC, does that affect the sort of provincial political scene?
It potentially could. I've been wondering about that as well. I think it's interesting provincially in several ways. I don't think you can assume that it reflects any sort of big surge to the New Democrats provincially. You know, for one thing, the actual number of increased New Democrat votes in British Columbia wasn't that great, and in many cases I think it reflected strategic voting where people said, this time I'm not going to vote Liberal or I'm not going to vote Green because I think I'm opposed to the Conservatives and I think that my NDP candidate has the best chance of being successful in my riding. But I think it's interesting from a Liberal's perspective. I mean, you do have, the provincial Liberals are sort of this coalition of federal and Conservatives and federal Liberals, and Gordon Campbell did a great job of keeping them all happy and getting along and making sure that the inevitable fights in federally didn't intrude into the provincial party. But if federal Liberals begin to feel sort of put upon by federal Conservatives, that's going to bring some strains to the BC Liberal Party, perhaps. It's certainly an issue for Christy Clark, herself a federal Liberal, to really be conscious of. On the other hand, she gets now a four-year break from federal election campaigns, and that's probably a plus for her.
And the by-election in Vancouver Point Grey, do you think she'll win that?
I do think she'll win that quite handily. She's a remarkably adroit politician, and I don't think, especially in that riding, that there's going to be any enthusiasm for not giving her a chance to sit in the legislature and show people what she can do. And probably in many ways the NDP really shouldn't be terribly concerned about that. She's going to get into the legislature one way or another. It's good to run a campaign. It would be better if she was doing some of the public all candidates meetings and things like that. But their opportunity is going to come when she gets into the legislature and when we move beyond the sort of outside making announcements like parking in parks is free, sort of clever things like that, and into a bit more of an agenda and a discussion around the budget and more serious issues. So the sooner, to some extent, she's in, the better for them, because it's not going to be that long before we go to a provincial election.
The HST referendum, the ballots come out, I guess, in the next few weeks. The candidates in my riding, they kept talking about that, Mr. Davies especially, the NDP MP, he was talking about that. What do you think will happen there? Do you think the possibility of it passing, that we could be stuck with the HST, do you think that'll happen?
There's a very slim possibility of it passing, I think, we have the report of the HST panel is out this week, sort of setting out some of the facts in a reasonable way. I think one of the problems for the Liberals is that it's not going to pass without a really, really good sales effort. But on the other hand, if it looks like the government is stacking the deck, spending too much public money, promoting it, trying to sell it too hard, then that's going to increase the strength of the opposition. So I find it hard to see it passing without some very clever finessing, perhaps along the lines of a promise to make a number of exemptions or to actually reduce the level of tax. So, no, it seems overall, though, that people are just still too angry about the tax. And ultimately, the tax is a shift onto middle-class families. There's just sort of no way of altering that reality. That's what happens. Businesses pay less, middle-class families pay more, and upper-class, high-income families pay even more on top of that. So people are unlikely, I think, to vote in favor of a tax that's targeted particularly at them.
Paul, you're as always good to do this. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
The website for more, wilcox.blogspot.com. The Victoria Times columnist Paul Wilcox on the line from Victoria in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.